What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Ableton Music Producer Podcast. This is Dan Giffen. Hope you guys are staying safe and healthy out there. Just want to give a quick update. If you do not own Ableton Live 10 Suite or Standard yet, I'd be happy to hook you up with a special deal. Just go to liveproducersonline.com/buyableton and I will hook you up. Also, I'm going to be releasing some more content. I've been working vigorously on some cheat sheets and some different workflows and hacks for anybody that's, say, newer to mixing, or maybe you just want to learn a couple tricks to tighten up your tracks and improve the quality of your mixes. Just go to liveproducersonline.com/mixing and you can subscribe to the newsletter. And I'll send you some rad content to help you beef up your mixes. And I will also be releasing a mixing course at the end of this July, which I'm pretty stoked for. Today we have an awesome guest. His name is Elliot Callaghan. He shares about how you can do sound design with Celery. He talks about some really cool behind the scenes insights with producing music for video games. It's a really interesting process. He also shares a lot of other really interesting stuff and some tips for anybody that wants to get involved in his career path in producing for gaming. So, and like, subscribe. I would appreciate you guys to leave a review if you listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. If you just choose to follow, subscribe, it would mean a lot to me. Have a safe and healthy week, and here's today's podcast. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Ableton Music Producer Podcast. This is Dan Giffen. We've got a special guest with us today. His name is Elliot Callaghan, and he is a music producer and the founder of Unlock Audio. He's a Chicago-based producer. His company, Unlock, is based in Chicago. They produce music to video games, and he's worked with a lot of clients like United Airlines, GMC, Spider-Man, others. Elliot's also taught as an adjunct professor in the film and game programs at DePaul University, which is pretty cool. So yeah, man, thanks for being here today. Thanks for hanging out.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I was doing some homework and you had a recent project drop with Ubisoft on July 1st, right?
Yeah. Did the soundtrack for the latest Trackmania game.
Awesome.
Which was super fun. It was all like, it was all electronic music, you know, sort of big beat, I guess. I guess my iteration of it isn't really big beat, but the itself has had a lot of people attached to it, and they've put a lot of musical stamps on it. And I, you know, I'm hoping that mine stands up to the rest of the crowd.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would think so. You've worked with some great companies in the past, and I mean, the video game market, honestly, personally, is like completely outside of my realm. Like, I like playing video games, but I don't know the first thing really about that process of what it takes to work with a developer. I can imagine that's pretty involved in a lot of different ways. But I've done some research and some homework. I'm actually blown away. The video game industry as a whole in 2017 in the US alone was worth $18.4 billion. And I'm thinking to myself, I might be doing the wrong thing in life right now. Maybe I should be tapping more into the gaming market.
Yeah, man. It eclipses film, sports, like a lot of other entertainment avenues when combined. You know, games where it's at, honestly.
Yeah. I'm stoked
to be a part of it.
It seems like it for sure. And I don't think they're going anywhere, especially since people are stuck in their homes these days quite a bit.
No kidding.
Yeah, there's more games now than ever. It's probably good business for you, for sure. It's great. Yeah, so how did you get started? Like, where did that start producing music for gaming?
For games themselves? Well, I guess backtrack a little bit. Music in general, I started playing violin when I was 4, piano at 8, guitar at 12. I almost pursued being a professional violinist.
That's cool.
Also kind of realized that I was practicing like 3 to 5 hours a day for everyone around me and not myself anymore. so I lashed out, became a metalhead, and went to school for architecture at first and was very mediocre, dropped out, and then enlisted in the Army National Guard and used my education benefits to study music. And since then, it's just been like honing my craft, you know, doing what you can to, you know, meet the right people and, you know, elevate your visibility. So, you know, like podcasts like this, like, thank you so much.
Yeah, no, thank you. Honestly.
And, yeah, that's it. I got into games about 2 years ago. I had been working in games as well as a number of other industries up till then. I never really purposefully pursued games. I always loved them. Like, I have too many memories of playing Streets of Rage on the Genesis when I was younger.
Classic. That's classic.
And, you know, I'd always loved it, and it just had never really occurred to me. And then when I was in music school, I met guy Spencer Rydell, and he was a great guy, and he told me, no, I'm here to write music for games. And that was the first time I was like, oh, wait, yeah, that's like a thing that needs to happen, right?
Yeah, yeah.
2 years ago, I decided to focus on games and developed a new model, new business, but since then, it's just been focused on that one industry, and I haven't looked back. I'm super excited. Got a great team. Stoked about it.
Yeah, it seems like it's working out. You've worked with some great clients. I mean, you're right. You don't often think that, you know, that could be a full-time career when you first are passionate about just making music for yourself, but that's obviously something that needs to happen, and that's a huge industry for sure. You said started playing guitar. I read that like Daft Punk was a huge influence for you personally and like making music, and you've also like done some DJing and some things along the way as well, right?
Yeah, when I was in school, you know, I still wanted to join a metal band that would take over the world. Still up for it, but I don't know how
it could still happen.
Yeah.
You never know. Don't give up on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Did that, played some live sets and whatnot by myself, as well as with Professor Click, who actually, we both went to school for music together here at Columbia in Chicago. And he also contributed a number of soundtracks to previous Trackmania titles. Cool. So when I was beginning to write music for Trackmania for Ubisoft, you know, I think that my time spent with him, us just having our aesthetics, like being aware of how each other write and the talks that we'd had, you know, definitely had an influence on what I wrote for it.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, so it sounds like you came from like a very like well-trained background in music, which I'm sure gives you a huge advantage to working with a developer right now and being able to like figure out their vision for something and then being able to have a quick turnaround. I would love to be able to kind of talk about some of that process with you too.
And
I know you have a small team of composers that you work with internally. So just maybe for anybody like myself who doesn't really know anything about this process or what that looks like, what does it look like when maybe you approach a company or they approach you with a developer and saying, here's our idea for a game? What does that look like?
Oh man, I mean, it really varies depending on the project, mm-hmm. the scale of it, I guess the experience level of the developer. I mean, you have to go through the sort of process of discovering what aesthetic it should really have. And, you know, that's one thing that has me so excited about the medium of games is that it's still relatively young since its inception, right? So I think that there's a lot of unexplored territory there. But a lot of times it's conversations about the emotion and the feeling that you want to have, how you want to portray the environment or the world. But then a lot of it also comes down to discussions with, you know, the design lead, because hopefully you're working with a team where the design lead is forming the ideas of the experience that they want to create, similar to like a film director, and they're conscious of audio as reinforcing that vision and helping to make that thing happen, right? That being said, I've definitely worked on teams as well when, you know, the design lead is just unaware of how audio can help what they want to create, like how it can reinforce their vision. And so lots of times it's a lot of questions and back and forth and asking for references to really get them to think about how audio fits in with everything else that they've been cooking up about what this thing is going to be. And, you know, lots of times it'll also turn into like, well, I think it'd be really cool if you did this right kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you kind of help guide that process too.
Sure. So a lot of times, do they already have, I guess, an environment already built with these graphics and gives you like a visual perspective of the kind of audio you're scoring for? Or is it just very project by project?
It's very project by project. I've worked on things where they just sent me Google images of words that they wanted, which was incredibly helpful, you know,
yeah.
It worked.
Yeah.
I've also worked on projects like, I just started one right now where they've been working on a vertical slice or like a vertical slice, the least amount of content of a game created to give someone the idea of what the entire game is going to be like, right? They'll create a vertical slice and then test it out to see if they want to continue development with it. And they've been working on it for a number of months at this point. And we just got brought on and we have 2 months and they have a ton of stuff, but it's just like, jump in, here's what we got, make it happen kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's really all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the Ableton Music Producer podcast. And I know that you also use Ableton Live. You have a nice big picture of your monitor with Ableton on the website. And so I figured we'd get along just from that. But yeah, I mean, so you do most of your production and everything in Ableton Live. Do you ever receive like a video from them that you import to Live that you use to score around? Is that part of your process?
Yeah. For any sort of linear moment or cinematic, I'm always taking it from the gameplay or the cinematic itself and then scoring it to picture in Ableton. But even if I'm doing something that's not linear per se, or say I'm creating an interactive music system that has a number of passages in terms of music, mm-hmm. and then I'm playing with systems to govern how you transition from one to the other. Even when I'm doing that, I'll still just take some video of gameplay and then have that available in Ableton just so I can quickly reference it, as well as any other like musical or game references that the developer's given me to.
Sure. So is part of your job also being able to create those easy transitions? So for example, I mean, The Legend of Zelda, I know this might be a wild example, but you know, Zelda, you're running around, you enter one world into the next, right? And the music instantly just kind of fades and transitions into different pieces. Is that something the developer, you just hand over blocks of songs for different environments to them? Or are you part of like the ongoing scoring between these like virtual environment transitions? I'm just curious. It might be a weird question, but yeah.
Yeah, no. And again, this is what separates games from linear media, right?
Yeah.
In linear media, you know when and how things are always going to happen. And in games, you don't. So you have to be able to create systems and assets that will allow for any sequence of events to happen in a way to where it still feels fluid and purposeful. You can just go from one area to another and then the loop that you've been playing fades out and then the loop fades in. But you can also have music shift and change depending on gameplay activity, depending on what the result of that change is based on gameplay activity. That can dictate the music going to a different sequence of music as opposed to what it would have gone to otherwise. So then you can create a seamless transition from this, say, you know, high intensity version of the music into a, you know, medium intensity version of the music into this new area so that it can fluidly go from one to the other. So it doesn't have that awkward, a thing ended and a new thing started. Like
right.
You're constantly trying to create that illusion of, we knew you were going to do stuff in this way and in that amount of time. So that the player is never taken out of that immersive experience.
Yeah. And music's such a powerful reinforcement to visual, just anything, where you're talking about movies or games or anything, you're really creating an experience for the gamer into this like virtual environment that they're going into. Especially even with like VR now, right? I mean, it's a whole new world of gaming that the world is entering right now. And it's just an exploding market. And music is such a powerful piece of that entire development process. It's pretty wild. I know that we talked like about the music process, but sound design, I know that your company works with a lot of sound design aspects, like whether it's like an explosion or things like that. Do you work with a lot of Foley as well?
Yeah, we do anything and everything in terms of audio. So that's the music, that's sound design, that's, you know, casting voice actors, recording the sessions, and also implementing them as well. Because, again, the thing that's specific to games is, you know, you don't have a rigid timeline. You construct events and systems that govern when and how these things play back. So you need to know about all that stuff and what the options are before you ever start making anything.
So have you had the chance to just start blowing up stuff in your backyard and recording it for fun? Like we just had the 4th of July, you know, that could be a really great sample pack. You could,
now that you mention it, man, that's a missed opportunity.
That would have been a great opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just get like 600 sparklers and duct tape them together and just let them off all at once. That
yeah.
Could be a lot of fun.
I think the coolest stuff, which, you know, if you're a sound designer, this is probably par for a course. I'm much more of a composer than a sound designer myself, but you know, other people on the team just nail it on the sound design front. But I've probably just destroyed too many vegetables in the line of work.
Vegetables, specifically vegetables.
Specifically, yeah. I mean, especially if you want to do any sort of like bone cracks, like celery.
Wow, that's brilliant.
Yeah, or like, and you know, it gets into really nuanced things like having room temperature celery as opposed to, say, frozen celery, because the water, like celery is mostly water, right? So you're freezing it, and that's going to give a different timbre as opposed to just regular room temperature stuff. And then it gets into all sorts of other things too. I've seen talks where people have attached essentially a microphone to a stethoscope, and then they put the stethoscope on different things, and the results you get from that are really crazy and cool.
Wow. So, hopefully that stethoscope never went inside of a person with a microphone. get a little weird. That's really funny. No, that's really interesting. Like, do you know any other examples that, other than vegetables, celery and bone cracking? That makes a lot of sense now that I think about it. I don't know if I'll ever be able to eat celery the same. I think I'm just thinking about that in the future.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Well, I know that you also have a partnership with Periscope.
Yeah,
is that right? So you've done some work with them, and that's a pretty well-known company. I mean, they have a studio in Chicago, right, where you live, and I think they have one in LA as well.
Yeah, we've been everyone in Unlock, we've been friends with Periscope before we were all members of Unlock for a while, and Periscope, up till recently, hasn't done much, if anything, really, in the realm of games. They've focused on commercials, and like, I know they've done the TV show Empire and a bunch of things for like Showtime. Mm-hmm. It's all linear media stuff. And we've been friends with a lot of people on their staff. So I went to them and said, hey, you know, I've got all these people together. We want to make awesome game stuff. But, you know, we don't have access to the facilities that you guys do. Is there something that we can do to help you all enter the games market? And we can be your base of knowledge for doing that. Because as knowledgeable as they are about everything, and like, if you want to mix a TV show or a movie, like, they will nail it. But as soon as it's, hey, you need to design a music or audio event or create an interactive music system, you need to use middleware, or you need to use the game engine itself, like all that stuff, they're like, I don't know what's going on. So
that's
kind of what that partnership is. We're basically, you know, their game audio arm.
I mean, you just name dropped a couple of different platforms. For anybody who doesn't even have any idea what those are, like, could you maybe talk about some of those?
Oh, sure. In the realm of game audio, you obviously need to create the audio assets themselves, whether that's music, voice, whatever. But then the way that you implement the audio, or actually make it play back when and how you want it to, is by designing these audio events. And it's been a very tedious task for programmers and audio programmers for a long time. But, you know, within the last decade, there's been an advent of what's called audio middleware. So instead of someone having to go in and actually use code to write in all of the specifics for all the sounds and how they play, you go into this audio middleware, and it's laid out in a way so a sound person can understand, you know, how this sound is going to play back and what's going to dictate how it plays back and when it happens. So, like, case in point, I'm working on a project right now where, say, we'll have a level, and there are like four short cinematics throughout the level, and I'm just talking about the music right now.
Yeah.
But I've got the main bass layer loop of music that repeats over and over, but I'm doing vertical resequencing with randomization. So whenever it repeats, it'll randomly add or subtract layers from it so it doesn't sound repetitive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, variations like that are integral to music composition, right? So the player doesn't realize that that's like the same musical idea over and over again. But then at the same time, I'm also connecting the progression in this music event based on the value of a parameter. And so I'm telling a programmer, hey, whenever we get to this point in the level, when, say, we're playing this cinematic, change the value of this parameter, and then my event that I've designed says, hey, that parameter's changed. All right, now I'm going to go over to this sequence of music in this way in time, and I'm going to play this, you know, section of music and whatnot. So it gets really, really deep mm-hmm. in terms of designing how you want this experience to be, but it requires a whole nother skill set in order to do it.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really, really interesting. So would you say, like, one example of that would be, say, if you're playing like Call of Duty and you're in a certain level and it's the scene starts changing because the bad guy comes out or something like that, and he's and like the enemy just starts firing on you, like all of a sudden the music is shifting through that process. Is that kind of an example of what you're talking about?
I mean, it could be. Yeah, it could be just like, hey, when you're in quote unquote regular or the base layer of gameplay, loop this thing. You can do a bunch of stuff to mask that it's the same thing repeating. Mm-hmm. Once you reach this part in the level, change the value of this parameter, your event that you've designed automatically switches to then this next piece of music, or maybe it adds like a, you know, a low pass filter onto the entire soundscape, right? So maybe it's like an explosion goes off, that changes the value of this parameter, that adds that low pass filter, and now everything you're hearing, at least for a set amount of time, has a low pass on it because you're getting that explosion effect, right?
Yes.
There's just a whole myriad of possibilities, really. You can get I nerd out on this stuff, so sorry if I'm rambling on.
Hey, no, honestly, this is a whole new thing for me, and I'm interested. I think it's really cool. It's a fascinating process, for sure. And there's a lot that goes into it, no doubt. How long does this process usually take when you first start working with a client? I'm sure it's very different project by project, but as far as a turnaround process and even just scoring the music or doing some of the sound design, like how long does that usually take with your team to be able to turn something around?
I mean, it, project by project, depends on the scope, depends on, you know, what's really appropriate for it and what they need.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that you have to create the assets, you have to design the events, and then you have to allow for either a technical sound designer or a programmer on their team to generate what's called the audio hookups between mm-hmm. the events that you've designed and the game engine itself. So usually if it's, hey, you know, we need 1/8, however many minutes of music, you know, you got to generate that. But then I would probably add on another maybe 15 to 20% of the time it took you to write the music to create those events and add the hookups to the game engine as well.
Yeah, I could imagine that it can be a pretty involved process. So who are some of your favorite clients you've worked with in the past so far? I mean, doing sound design or scoring audio?
Yeah. Just in the realm of games or anything and everything?
I mean, sure. Anything and everything. Why not?
I mean, I really enjoyed working on Trackmania recently. It had been a long time since I did some, like, you know, sledgehammer kick drum EDM sort of stuff.
That's awesome.
And, you know, that stuff's super fun. I'm also a metalhead. So anything that just gets you like amped up, pumped up and want to break something in a positive way, like I'm down.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I was in a few hardcore bands. I can relate to that.
Cool.
Yeah.
That was definitely a blast. In terms of just anything and everything, a little over a year ago, I made a new work for the Joffrey Ballet here in Chicago, and they had a program for young and up and coming choreographers. And I went to them just because lifelong Chicagoan, I'm a composer. Like I just want to do something with Joffrey because like that's just awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool.
And you know, I just also was looking for ways to promote myself at the same time. So I'm like, hey, I get to do this awesome thing, help someone promote myself. Everybody wins.
Yeah.
So I went to them and said, hey, if there's anyone in this program you have that, you know, likes what I do and is open to collaborating with a composer for their work, like, please let me know. And, yeah, this one choreographer, Marissa Osato, who's from LA, they flew her in. She liked my stuff. And then, yeah, we collaborated on making a new work, which is really interesting because half the time it was me saying, I feel the music needs to do this to fit the vision that you're trying to create as a choreographer. And half the time it was her saying, well, I'm seeing the choreography in my head right now that's happening to this music, and I want to go this way with it. So we kind of had to like navigate and almost compromise with each other to find where things would be most successful. But I'm super proud of what we came up with.
Awesome. Well, congrats, man. That's great. That's a great opportunity. That's really cool. Yeah,
thanks.
For sure. Yeah. And one thing I always tell even my Ableton Live students is like collaboration is key, right? Because I'm sure that experience and a lot of these experiences you've had, even working with developers or other artists, choreographers, I mean, it stretches you in a lot of ways in your own music production, forces you to like grow and learn new skills, or even just collaborating with another artist if you're just producing just straight music together. I feel like collaboration is so key. It's going to take you to a new place.
Oh, dude, 1,000%. Well, and you know, especially on the business development side of things, like, you know, a lot of people want to do what we do and there's just not enough opportunity out there. So you got to cultivate those relationships and be awesome and be able to say yes to whatever comes up for you.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I know there's a good handful of projects I've done for free just because of self-interest or opportunities that could come from it, you know, and you just got to do what you can, especially now. I mean, it seems like everybody can produce music. Everybody is a music producer these days, right? And so, I mean, people are making full tracks on their iPhone. There's so many resources out there to make music. And so being able to cultivate those relationships is really important too. Yeah, for sure. Speaking of opportunities, if someone wanted to start producing audio for gaming, like they're brand new to this, they want to go into it, they're gamers themselves, and they use Ableton, like, where should they start? What kind of advice would you give to somebody like that?
Oh, man. Dude, that's the question, right?
Right.
So assuming that they're already awesome at their craft, whether it's sound design or music.
Yeah.
Okay. If you've got that, ultimately the way that I view like getting gigs and opportunities is, you know, people want to work with their friends and they want to work with people that they're comfortable with. So ultimately, you know, try to be people's friend. Don't try and sell them. Try and be their friend. They will naturally want to work with you. And if for whatever reason it's difficult for you to be their friend, maybe it's just a long distance, it's difficult to get in touch with them or to you know, really cultivate that relationship, whatever it is, do anything and everything you can so that if someone is just basically scoping you out, like, you just look as awesome as possible and like you can solve the most amount of problems for them. Right.
Okay.
So that's definitely going to be establishing a formal business entity. Don't just do it on your own. There's also a lot of legal benefits to doing that. So if you're going to take this seriously, legally take yourself seriously too. Definitely that.
I write off all my plugins and music gear. It's a tax write-off.
I do that too. And if, you know, and if I buy a game because I'm trying to research on a project, I write that off too.
Yeah.
Like it's part of what I do.
Yeah. Might as well.
So there's that. I would also say, like, have plethora of work examples and have it easily accessible to the people that might hire you.
Like a website with a portfolio type of thing.
Have a website with a portfolio and have it packaged in a way to where someone's going to be able to look at exactly what they're interested in.
Yeah.
If you are trying to find game gigs and then the only stuff on your website is commercials, like, a game developer is not going to care. They're not. It's different. Like, it is a different skill to write for a commercial and to make that happen in the 15 or 30 second spot for the brand than it is to, you know, figure out how to make an interactive music system for a game and nail that aesthetic.
That makes sense.
If I'm a developer, like, cool, you can write for Coke. That means nothing.
Yeah.
So package things so that they can get exactly what they want. Like, case in point, the Ubisoft gig, when they were first looking for people to audition for it, over the years I've just, you know, kept all of the tracks that I've been working on a single SoundCloud account, and I've made playlists of all these different genres. So not only was I able to send them something that was specific to games, but I was like, hey, here's my playlist for games that are in this kind of style and aesthetic. Let me know what you think.
Nice.
You know? But to be able to have that available takes a lot of time, takes a lot of organization. So it's it's one of those things where, you know, you're working on tracks now that probably aren't hypothetically going to get you a gig for about 5 or 8 years until you just stumble into something.
And
that's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah. I had a podcast with Tommy Z. I don't know if the name rings a bell, but he does a lot of commercial film scoring composition. And one thing he was he said a very similar thing that you said as far as just building that portfolio and these taking these steps, organizing your library of sounds. And, you know, he was talking about, like, a lot of us listening have just a massive archive of half-finished songs just laying around on our hard drive. And that could be a portfolio builder. Just finish it off, do a quick master, put it up on SoundCloud, and you just never know. That's more content, right? That could be used later.
Yeah, heck yeah. Well, and especially if you're interested in the production music side of things, like, take that, finish it, find a library, send it to them, just wait for that passive income, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of independent games that are being released these days. So, you know, once somebody builds their portfolio, they get their website, they have SoundCloud, their website's looking sexy, everything's just organized, it's ready to go. What kind of, I guess, outreach could these people be doing? Somebody who wants to get into the gaming side, you know, what does that look like? Sending an email, like where are the people they should be reaching out to even get that portfolio first? You know, it's one thing to have all these songs, but getting their foot in the door, who could they be contacting? Even these independent gaming developers?
Yeah. I mean, there's always so many different forums and online communities that they can just be present in, that can always lead to something. So much of it is, I feel, being present and visible in the community as well as to the individual people that can make these decisions, right? Mm-hmm. So that is being helpful to the community. If you're only trying to take from the community will not give to you, right?
Yeah.
Give three times as much as you try to take. That's mm-hmm. just my kind of like rule of thumb. So yeah, that's Facebook groups, that's forums, that's also reaching out to people individually, right? Actually, the biggest game changer for me was when I took some courses on business and I discovered the world of CRMs or customer relationship managers, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's something that so many people like in our field never talk about.
That's true, actually. That's really like, true.
And I don't know why. It's integral. Again, yeah. You want to be someone's friend or you want them to feel comfortable, right? You're not going to achieve either of those things if you're not actually, you know, making an effort to stay in touch with people and be a good friend or make them feel comfortable with you.
Right.
You know? So there's a ton of CRMs out there. Like I personally use Nutshell, but I've used HubSpot. Mm-hmm. You know, there's things like MailChimp, so you can stay in touch with people. I mean, do all this stuff with tact, but you know, if you're not, people don't care about you until you care about them first. So
that's
true. Yeah. Care about them and see how you can help them. Case in point, there was the composer for Empire, right? I reached out to him many years ago when I was first getting out of school because I was like, he's the coolest for Empire and he's in Chicago. Like, I just,
why not?
What else do you do?
Right.
Sent him an email, said, hey, I'm just out of school. I'd love to pick your brain on some stuff. He was kind enough to say yes to that, which, by the way, he wasn't under any obligation to just respond to me at all. He was nice enough to do that. Then, you know, we grabbed some lunch. He was a really nice guy. And then at the end of it, he mentioned that he was moving in a couple of weeks, right? And I was like, oh, dude, like, if you need some help, I'll help you out, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, at the time, I almost had this attitude of, well, I would never do something like that because that's me just being disingenuous. I'm not actually doing it because I want to help him. Like, I want to get something from it, right?
Sure.
And I think that's an attitude that a lot of people got to get over because ultimately what happened is this guy was super nice, grabbed lunch with me. I helped him move, right? And then, you know, a couple months down the line, he was willing to put me in touch with his agent who used to do stuff with Hans Zimmer and like all this other stuff.
That's cool.
And it's just when you really get into like, you know, developing yourself and your relationship and your business, like there's no sort of disingenuous thing about it. You either did it and you helped someone or you didn't. And it's only positive. So any sort of mindset of, well, listen, this is disingenuous. You're only doing it to, you know, get something from it. Like that's you projecting how terrible of a person you are.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. I think people can smell authenticity pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, I think in our field, in our career path, I think people in the industry are usually generally pretty good at being able to spot when somebody is authentic or being genuine. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it, like you said, give three times more than you take. That's a good general rule. If you want to really build a relationship with somebody or actually be a part of a community or you want to go somewhere and you have a passion and trying to make it happen and build those relationships, that's good advice. That's good advice. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I want to respect your time. I know we've been hanging out for a good 40 minutes or so, and I appreciate you just being on the podcast, and I know you're busy. There's a lot going on with your company, and congratulations on working with Ubisoft and everything you guys have going on now. What is the next big project, or maybe you can't say, or what are you guys working on in the team right now?
I am under NDA, so I can't say.
Right. But that's fine.
It is a mobile title, and it's a blend of styles and genres that I'm really excited by.
Cool.
So yeah.
It's exciting, man. Great. Yeah. Well, good luck. Best of luck with all the projects you have. And for whatever reason, if you decide to come to Indianapolis, hit me up. I'll buy you a meal or a beer. And if I'm ever in Chicago, I'll let you know. Maybe we can meet up sometime.
Heck yeah, that'd be great. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, for sure, man. Anytime. Thanks a lot. Thanks again, guys, for checking out the podcast. If you are newer to Ableton Live and you want to get started, or if you want one-on-one help with me monthly on your projects, you can access all my webinars, Ableton Live courses, including the upcoming mixing course in Ableton Live that I'm releasing and I'm super stoked for. You can join by going to liveproducersonline.com, hit the fat green join button, check out the membership plans. I would love to help you step up your music skills and release more tracks and reach your goals using Ableton Live. Also, if you want to stay connected, just go to liveproducersonline.com/newsletter and you can be the first to know when these new episodes drop. Also, if you want to hear the music that I am making under my artist name Philia, you can do that by going to philiamusic.com, or I'm on the gram. You can hang out on Instagram together. So the handle is @philiamusic. Yeah, have a great week. Love you guys. Stay safe, and I'll see you next time.